Hi, Steve. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Rob Mara of Tesla Daily. And Tesla just reported their Q4 earnings just a couple hours ago. And we've got a ton of stuff to go over. Rob, welcome back. How have you been?
Hey, Dave. Been good. Excited to talk about earnings.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. What was your reaction to the earnings? I mean, initially, the GAAP EPS came lower, non-GAAP and GAAP came lower than expected. Did that kind of throw you off at all, in the beginning?
Yeah, it definitely did, because the first thing I looked at was revenue, and I saw that it beat my expectations by like $400 million or $500 million. So I'm like, oh, like huge, huge beat. I happened to see the margin was above 30% for automotive. I was like, okay, great. Like, they crushed it. Scroll down to see earnings, and it's like 254, exactly, which was a little bit lower than I expected.
Yeah.
And certainly after seeing a beat to my other numbers, it threw me off for sure. So I was like, okay, what's going on here? Looked immediately at operating expenses, saw that those jumped up from, you know, 1.6 billion all the way up to 2.2 or 2.3 billion. And from there, just dug into the letter, found out that was because of the CEO payroll tax from Elon selling his 2012 performance award.
Yeah.
And then they also recognized, you know, $250 million of the 2018 award as well this quarter. So it's almost $600 million right there. Where I was only expecting about $150 million cost. So that was the, you know, whole difference in terms of really want to beat my numbers, and then fell actually below my numbers. And from there I got re-excited again and like, oh, they are making really insane, strong progress here, which I don't think people get immediately and probably still don't really understand.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like this one time payroll, I think it was $340 million. It kind of threw off the numbers where, you know, everything is a little bit lower, like operating margin, and, you know, it's just 14.7%. But like, if you back out just that one number of that payroll tax, right, because we shouldn't see that again. I mean, I have operating margins at 16.7%, right? That's the true operating margin. But yeah, and then non-GAAP EPS goes up to like 2.87, I think, without, you know, that just that one-time charge. So yeah, it's interesting. The stock price just like kind of fluctuated a lot. People, I think, didn't know what to make of, I think, the Tesla earnings for this quarter.
For sure. And I just want to comment really quick, because that's only about two-thirds of it, because the CEO compensation plan, that was $250 million. There's only like $50 million left on that.
Yeah.
That's going to be all that there is for 2022. Like, that's the whole year versus $900 million this year. So that's going to impact both your operating margin. Backing that out bumps it up to 18% then.
Yeah.
And it's going to impact your non-GAAP earnings because it falls into SG&A. So even though it's, well, actually, I'm not sure on that. I'd have to double check on that, but I feel like that gets double counted. I can't remember for sure. But either way, it is impacting the operating margins for sure this quarter.
Yeah, yeah. They also, Zach, on the conference call, you were saying that there's like the payroll tax was $340 million, but then he was saying there's an additional, I guess, $360 million of expedite fees and warranty kind of recall costs, which should be more one-time costs. So that also is interesting too. I mean, I'm assuming a lot of that goes into just a cost of goods or revenue, which they could have had a higher gross margin without this $360 million of additional costs. So yeah, a lot of interesting things there.
Yeah, and I'd heard him, I'm glad you said that, because that was one of the things on the call that I was like typing furiously and missed that, because I heard him say $700 million in total. So yeah, that must be the 360 and the 340.
Yeah.
With those like one-time things. And yeah, that's kind of always the case with Q4. There's always these expenses, especially with just the global, you know, environment right now, everyone trying to catch up on a lot of business. That is just exacerbating what we normally see in Q4, which is higher expenses, which come in through cost of goods sold, SG&A, driving gross margin down, operating margin down naturally from where Q3 is at. So I'm sure we're seeing some of that. And even with that, or yeah, Zach's saying we're seeing some of it, even with that, they still improved margin quarter over quarter, even excluding credits by, you know, 40 basis points. So very exciting to see. And again, there's a lot of things suppressing the actual strength of Tesla's business. And I feel like that's been the story for basically forever. And we're starting to see it, you know, come out of that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the highlights for me was the $4 billion of EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and just their cash flow. I mean, they're really generating a lot of cash, like much more than they're spending in terms of CapEx. And I don't see how this slows down unless, you know, they massively increase their investments. But it just seems like, I don't know, they're just a lean company. Like, the factories don't cost that much, you know? So it just seems like this cash generation is going to continue. I don't know. What's your take kind of on Tesla, this the coming out of a cash cow, you know, company here?
I think it happened a lot sooner than people thought it would happen. You know, if you would have gone back a year or two and said, hey, Tesla's going to be building two massive factories that are going to produce 1 million to 2 million vehicles per year, you know, what's their cash flow going to be like? Everyone would have said negative, like for sure negative. And now we come into the quarter and it's, you know, $2.5 billion, $2.7 billion or something like that, while they're also building two factories. Like, it's just insane what they've been able to do. We've seen them do that with Shanghai and now replicating it in Austin and Berlin. And yeah, it's just extremely exciting and very impressive. Like, Tesla should get a ton of credit for how well they control their capital.
Yeah. Did you catch that flex by Zach Kirkhorn where he's like, we could grow 50% volumes even with just Fremont and Shanghai. We don't even need Austin or Berlin. I'm like, oh, whoa.
I did catch that. Crazy. My jaw kind of dropped a little bit on the live stream I was doing because it's something that I thought would be achievable for Tesla to do, or at least get to like that sort of a run rate, 1.5 million or so. But I didn't expect Zach to say like, oh, we can definitely do this, you know. that was a little bit surprising and extremely bullish. I think, you know, when you add in then Texas and Berlin, it's, you know, pretty clear they'll get above 1.5 million, maybe somewhere in the, you know, 1.75 million type of range.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, 2022 is going to be a historic year for Tesla. What are, I mean, let's take the other side here. So, Zach Kirkhorn, he mentioned there's going to be some costs associated with ramping, let's say, Austin and Berlin. You have two big factories ramping at the same time, a lot of personnel, probably the first quarter negative gross margins. Do you see that hitting Q1 margins in any significant way, or do you think that will be offset by just the continued kind of margin improvements with Shanghai and Fremont?
Yeah, I need to go back and think a little bit in my model. It'll hit it. You know, we're not going to see margins improve dramatically like we would have seen if these ramps weren't happening. What I say that for is because I want to go back and look at Shanghai, because I know there was a bit of a hit, but honestly, it was only about a quarter. And then Tesla kind of got to volume production and then margins started going back up again. Mm-hmm. So honestly, I don't even really care. Yes, it'll influence Q1, Q2, but once we get into Q3, Q4, and certainly into 2023, you know, no one's going to remember that. Just like I can't even remember right now how the Shanghai ramp really went, because it doesn't matter, right? Yeah. It's only a temporary period of time where Tesla's just working through it. If they spend a few hundred million, even up to a couple billion dollars right now, it's all worth it because of the cash flow that these factories are going to generate is just, like we're seeing right now, is just insane.
Yeah. I think in some ways, like Zach Kirkhorn saying that they can already get, let's say, 50% growth with just Fremont and Shanghai, it kind of de-risks a little bit of 2022 for Tesla, where they're not so dependent on Austin and Berlin having to ramp super fast. They can take their time or at whatever pace, you know, it's all just extra. But it also brings up 2023, like that's when you're going to see even more kind of volume and all of the additional gross margin contributions from these two new factories. So it's not just like a 2022 story, I think. I think 2022 is the story of the ramping, right? The getting it started. But a lot of things ahead, I think, next year as well.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. And one thing on that 50% growth, I don't know if it was Zach or Drew or maybe Lars said that they don't need 4680s to hit that. Right. Which I think that's a huge statement for what you said, de-risking. Mm-hmm. Even if 4680s take a long time to ramp up, Tesla can still get from the supply chain enough batteries to build 1.5 million vehicles or so, which is, I think, very comforting to hear. And I think institutions are going to, you know, be very happy to hear that comment.
Yeah. I mean, that was surprising to me where they're like, we're not cell constrained this year. You know, we have enough batteries. I'm like, whoa. And I guess they're saying they're like chip constrained or supply, you know, chain constrained a bit. It's a little bit interesting how they're saying like the chips are just like these basic chips, you know? I mean, it doesn't seem like it's anything crazy or fancy, but that's like their limiting factor. It seems in some ways it's bullish to me because it's like they've handled that type of shortage in the past. And they're a company that's able to move fast. They're able to create just like new contracts, give incentives, pay more money, you know, because they have good enough margins. And so it seems like, you know, it's a pretty reasonable thing, at least for me, where I'm like, you know, it's the supply chains are a risk for execution, but it seems like, you know, most likely they'll be managed okay. What are your thoughts with all that?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a short-term problem in nature, and it might take some time to solve it just because it takes a long time to spool up that production. And like Elon said, there's just, you know, an element of hoarding going on, sort of a run on the supply chain, I guess. And it'll dissipate at some point. Where it's comforting is that, you know, with a new technology like 4680s, there's an element of unknown there because it's never been done before. Some of the things that Tesla's trying to do in terms of the manufacturing process, a chip that controls the seat moving back and forth, those have been, you know, in production for two decades, like, I don't know, probably even longer than that. So, it's a solved problem. It's just something that's going to take time to get, you know, the capacity for. It's not like the supply chain won't exist to fully fulfill Tesla's needs. It's just getting caught up. So yeah, completely agree.
What do you think the biggest risks in 2022 for Tesla are?
Well, now that we just talked about the supply chain, I mean, they were pretty clear that supply chain is the biggest thing. But I think it's akin to, you know, 2020, 2021. That was the biggest risk for Tesla too, supply chain, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if we looked at what Tesla was actually trying to achieve in 2021, their targets were probably much higher than what they actually ended up doing. I wouldn't be surprised if Tesla had originally thought that they could probably do like, you know, a million, 1.1 million. And then these supply constraints knocked them down to, you know, the 936,000 that they ended at. Still looks awesome to us, right? Like, I'm still happy with the numbers, but I think for Tesla, they were probably like, ah, we could have done, you know, way, way better without some of these constraints. Probably going to be a similar situation again for 2022, right? Like, maybe Tesla's thinking they could do 2 million, 2.2 million or something like that. And maybe the supply constraints keep them down to, you know, 1.7 or 1.8 or something in that ballpark. So that's the biggest risk. And then FSD, you know, Elon's obviously super bullish on it. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But if that doesn't really materialize, it sounds like Tesla's really planning a lot of their business around that coming to fruition. If that doesn't happen, then they may need to make some changes, and maybe that causes some delays in growth or, you know, whatever else for some period of time.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's remarkable how conservative Tesla has been with guidance, just sticking with their 50%, you know, and not giving like the next quarter, the next year. And now the analysts, like, they just, Tesla's just kind of trained them. They don't even ask anymore.
I personally love that.
It's so great because, like, it just, you know, shifts the question to other things, I think, which are more important. But yeah, it's interesting because, like, I love it how they're just, you know, 936,000 cars is a huge beat because it is a huge beat. You know, it's because they didn't guide for a million cars. You know,
that's exactly why we're happy. They got it for 750,000 plus.
So. Exactly. Yeah. So I love this, you know, 50% guidance. We're not going to tell you anything more, you know? And so you have these expectations of like, okay, maybe 1.4 million or something, you know? And if they beat, then it feels like a beat. So yeah, I think that's great. And it does seem like, you know, they're holding a lot of more ambitious goals, you know, secretively, and they're wise. They're wise to not share it. It's like, it's such a interesting evolution or maturity of the company and the management, you know, compared to the past years for sure.
Yeah. Very different than the old strategy of basically publicizing their internal stretch goals, and then they'd always miss them. And we'd always be like, well, the goal was crazy. Like, this is still amazing progress, but it just completely flips the narrative. So at this stage in Tesla's growth, I'm definitely happy to see that they did that. I think in the past it made sense because that allowed them to raise capital to those audacious goals, but obviously they just don't need to do stuff like that anymore.
Yeah. One of the most kind of surprising kind of parts of the call was when, I forget who it was, but asked an analyst asked if they're preparing for, you know, 2024 volumes, if they need a cheaper model, and if they're working on a $25,000 vehicle. And Elon's basically saying, yeah, we're not working on it. You know, we're just not interested at this time. and then he segues in and say, you know, with FSD, we could charge basically whatever. We keep our cars the same price, sell as many as we can. And I thought it marked a very interesting kind of change or kind of evolution in Tesla's strategy, where I think before, you know, they were highly dependent on a cheaper model to ramp volume, and that was assumed that that's what they would do. But now it feels like Elon is getting to this point where he's becoming really convinced that this FSD thing is going to happen soon, to the point where he's like, wait, why do we need a $25,000 car? We could, you know, our car's going to be sold like crazy, like hotcakes with FSD, right? It's going to be the biggest asset increase of any asset class ever. What's your take on this? This just seems like a very, it's like a very strong conviction on Elon that I'm just like, whoa, man, he's really, it's affecting Tesla's, you know, trajectory, and he's doubling down. He's going big on this. What's your take on all this?
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree with your perception of, you know, what Elon is kind of thinking. And I think we're not working on the $25,000 car is interpreted more to me as like, we're not working on rolling out a $25,000 car. I'm sure they still have like designs for a cheaper Tesla. Mm-hmm. That's probably gone back, you know, many years now. So that's my interpretation of that comment. But yeah. I think you're right that Elon is sitting there and thinking about, okay, look at all this demand, look at all these orders we've got at these price points. We still don't even haven't introduced the cheaper Model Y into North America. Who knows if they're even really selling standard range Model Ys, you know, to what degree in Europe yet. And even then, those are imported vehicles. Like once Berlin is up, that's going to dramatically change the European market and the demand there. So I think people have continued to just underestimate what the ceiling is for Model 3 and Model Y, even before considering Elon's comments on FSD. But then, yeah, certainly when you layer the FSD stuff on top of that, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with Elon if you think that's going to happen. I just think most people don't think that's going to happen. Yeah. In terms of FSD being, you know, level 4 in a year. And that's why I mentioned that as a risk. If that is actually changing Tesla's strategies, then if they don't solve it and all of a sudden demand levels out for these vehicles at 2.5-3 million vehicles per year, well, then you might have a lag period where you need to kind of jump back on the $25,000 Tesla train, although it's probably more like a $30,000 or $35,000 Tesla. At that point.
Yeah, because I know Tesla has been very, very good at kind of projecting and planning for the next stage of growth. They always have the next factory, the next model, so that growth looks, you know, pretty smooth. But yeah, if they are planning something where they're counting on the demand to be there, you know, for their current lineup of vehicles, but if FSD doesn't pull through as, you know, as quick or as great as, you know, maybe they're expecting, then you could see this, as you're saying, a lag a bit, where then they have to kind of rush a cheaper car, which they could do pretty fast. You know, I mean, they have all of the pieces, but it's still like, you know, a risk factor in some ways, you know, FSC, I think. It's very bold of Elon to, I think, one thing I was commenting to my wife over dinner, I'm like, you know, Elon, he doesn't, typical CEOs, they would just run things in parallel. They wouldn't like prioritize to the point of taking resources away. But I feel like Elon's brain, in a sense, is he sees things so cut and dry, where it's like, if FSD is fundamentally like it makes sense to him, and he sees it's the trajectory, it's all numbers and, you know, the interventions per mile, all that stuff, and he sees it, then he's gonna just go all in, like prioritize that heavy, you know, to the point where he's not gonna be as interested in, like, you know, I don't know, a cheap economy car that doesn't get good margins, right? He's like, hey, I'm gonna focus on this. But then it goes into this next thing, which is he talks about Optimus, the robot, as the most important project that Tesla's working on today. And I'm telling my wife, I'm like, I think he's actually prioritizing Optimus over everything else. I think the best engineers are probably working on it. The top time commitment will go to that project. I think he's actually doing a lot to prioritize that. And that's why he's saying that. He just doesn't say it's the most important product and doesn't follow up, you know, with action. So I thought that was a huge, huge reveal. I think most people won't get it because it seems like it's so far out. It's like 10 or 15 years out or whatever. But I'm just like shocked, actually. My head is still spinning over, you know, that comment by him. What was your kind of take on all this?
No, that's really good insight. I think you've taken that thought process even a step further than I've, you know, put together too. So I think you're totally right about like people not getting it. when I saw the Tesla bot unveiling, I was like, that's awesome. It's obviously, the potential is indescribable for what that can accomplish, but it's so far away, right? Like that's my perception of it. With this call, that perception for me has shifted. You know, I mean, we've heard Elon talk about autonomy for half a decade now. We could probably end up seeing a similar trajectory for the Tesla bot too, right? Like it's, I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like that, but, yeah, his statements on the call were definitely a little bit like eye opening, like, hey, pay more attention to this than what you guys are already. Which I think you're right, is probably not a lot yet. But yeah, anyway, so to your point, I think the talent allocation is very interesting to consider, because I think you're right. I don't think Elon would say this is the most important product and then not act accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just found the conference call so, I want to say entertaining, but it was kind of funny to me, because I felt like Elon was saying, you guys don't get FSD, you know, how valuable this is. You guys don't understand, you know, the implications. Like, this is really, really big, and this is crazy. And I kind of felt him like kind of almost bite his tongue and like giving the numbers and the actual, you know, what he's saying. But then while he's saying this, he's saying, but we have something that's just like 10 times, 100 times, much bigger than even FSD, you know, they're working on right now, which is like, and he talks about the limit of the economy being like unlimited with this product. Basically, it's the ultimate product, the end product, right? The end game. And it's just like so crazy. Like in the same conference call, you could, you know, say like, we're disrupting our entire auto business with this robotaxi, full self-driving, and we're working on something to completely disrupt, you know, or to be much, much bigger than, you know, this crazy robotaxi FSD business. It's just like, it just seems like I don't know, Elon's on a different level. Yeah, it's crazy.
I completely agree. And like, I think when I was doing the stream of the earnings call, I was just sitting there and I started typing, like, the total addressable market for Tesla is just, it's like incalculable, right? And that's kind of what Elon's expressing too, is he doesn't even really know. It's just insanely huge. Even with just robotaxis, FSD, and then you add in, oh, we're just going to replace all labor on top of that. Yeah. Okay. Let's do it, Elon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's so interesting, because originally, I don't think Tesla obviously planned to make an AI robot, you know, when they first started, even 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago. And it just seems like, you know, with one product that they get rolling, and they're almost by force having to develop like these technologies like autopilot, and then these, you know, going down this path and going deeper into AI. And now they find themselves kind of in this really interesting place where you have this foundation of a strong auto business that's starting to turn billions and billions of dollars of profit per quarter in cash flow. And then you've got this second layer, which is this like multi-trillion dollar market of robotaxi and full self autonomous driving, and even autonomous logistics and all this stuff. And then on top of that, it's almost unfathomable. Like, you have this like product that replaces all labor. And it's like almost, it's so mind-boggling that one company can have this type of layered, you know, potential. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's pretty crazy.
Well, cut it off there. That's our recap. We don't know.
Exactly. Because I was looking at my numbers, right? I was looking at like my spreadsheets and stuff. I'm like, after a while, I thinking about this, I'm like, who cares about like this quarter's numbers right now? You know, yeah. It's like, if this stuff works out, obviously, you know, you bring up risks, and it's true. Like, some of this stuff on the other side takes a long time. Elon tends to be optimistic with timelines. He sees like things before others, and there's lots of things that have to happen before it comes to fruition. So yeah, there is definitely a timing issue, and you know, who knows how long this will take, optimist. But that said, like, I don't see this stuff as being like impossible, or, you know, they don't seem like unrealistic to the point where it's like, oh my gosh, this is not going to happen. It just seems like a timing issue more. You know, like how long it'll take, how many obstacles, but the path, the realistic kind of path to execute for autonomous driving and then, you know, Optimus, it seems like very, very realistic and compelling to me. What's your kind of take on all this?
Yeah, I agree. And I think what's exciting about Tesla is that like they have the time, right? They're, even if the Tesla bot takes a decade, 2 decades, whatever, it's Tesla's going to continue on their growth trajectory with all the other areas of their business, with automotive, FSD, energy. There's so much there supporting the development of this project that if it happens 2030, 2040, it's fine. Like, it's just going to be more and more upside that helps support a higher growth rate for Tesla in the future, which will increase its valuation through that period of time too. So it's super exciting to have that kind of attached to the business, even if it doesn't really end up meaning anything in, you know, in this decade. The other thing I would add to that is that I would imagine that initially we'll see the Tesla bot do, you know, some very specific things. Like Elon mentioned, oh, we'll have it move parts around the Tesla warehouse. There are already robots that do that today, right? So that's not a really high target to achieve. I think Tesla could probably do that with the prototype right now. And I think what we're going to see, kind of like what we've seen with FSD, is that over time, they'll just continue to refine the, you know, AI software and add more and more tasks, more and more functionality, just like what we've seen with Autopilot, adding automated lane changes, nav on Autopilot, eventually in a city streets from there. So I would imagine we'll probably see a similar trajectory with the Tesla bot where, okay, first it's working in the warehouse on these very specific tasks. And over time, it just, you know, continues to become more and more robust, more and more flexible, more valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I wanted to get your kind of opinion or feedback, or just actually, how are you dealing with all the macro volatility? You know, stock price changes $70-$80 in a day, like negative, positive. Like, does it, you know, mentally at all, or affect you at all? Or are you just pretty, at this point, are you pretty much numb to the stock price movements?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Tesla's been like this forever, right? Like, we've seen 50% drops many times in history, 40% drops. It's like nothing too new. Yeah, the macro is adding to it, but I think Tesla has shown really strong support. You know, this was shaping up to be, I was looking at this when the NASDAQ was down like 5% the other day. Mm-hmm. It was going to be the worst 3-week period since 2009. If the NASDAQ had closed that day down 5%, it ended up in the green, I think, that day. Like, that was the wild volatility day. But yeah, this is one of the worst periods of time from a macro perspective that we've ever gone through. And Tesla's still only down like 20-25%. Basically on the strength of the Q4 delivery report, right? That happened right before all the macro stuff. So I've actually been pretty happy with how Tesla has held up. Other than that, yeah, you just kind of, you know, you wait through it. Like, Tesla's fundamentals are so strong that I have no concern about where Tesla's heading. It's just a matter of time. People that are highly leveraged using derivatives, it'll get stressful. And I do use some of those things. But you just got to understand what you're signing up for when you do those things. And as long as you understand that and you understand that Tesla can go down at no fault of Tesla, it just, you know, that's part of the deal. So can't really get too mad about it.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like, just Tesla. I mean, it's not just Tesla, obviously. Other growth companies have experienced a lot of volatility of late. But yeah, I think for me, I always just go back to like, how confident, how much conviction do I have on where this is all headed? And that, you know, kind of helps ground me in a sense. And it's hard for me to see other companies that have such a clear kind of almost, I want to say predictable in a sense of you can 100% predict it, but predict it in a sense where, you know, you can have a subjective opinion on like years out, you know, and you can take like, let's say a 50%, you know, volume guidance year over year just and project it out in many years. And then Tesla gave a 20 million, you know, cars per year guidance or goal for 2030 as well with exact kind of, you know, battery requirements. Like, this is stuff that typically companies don't give because they don't, like, it's hard to project that far out, right?
And so they don't have the confidence in it.
Exactly. But I think the unique situation is it's like they're in a situation where they can project that out because it really is more of a like a supply. It's like the market is ready, it's there, and they're seeing the power of, you know, their costs coming down, demand going up, the technology getting better, the range getting better, performance, all this stuff. So it just seems like it's just kind of like this, it's an interesting kind of, you know, investment where it's not guaranteed by any means, like no investment is. There's always risks. Lots of things go wrong. But I can make my own decision on a certain concrete set of numbers going forward, you know, with revenue or margins or profits. And I can make my own decision on how many, like what type of multiple I want to give, you know, for a company like this. So I mean, that kind of grounds me a lot, just kind of, you know, having more clarity on the numbers, and it helps me to, you know, kind of weather the storm more.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, it's nice because Tesla's fundamentals are so strong and have been getting so strong over the last 12 months and 18 months, that I think that really helps a lot too. You've seen these really strong margins. You see these amazing cash flow numbers, great GAAP net income, price earnings compression just happening extremely fast. You know, it's down below 200. Next report will be below 150. Report after that, probably below 100, maybe a little bit longer after that. But yeah, like you said, it's just a very, very clear path that you can have high confidence in. And even if Tesla misses their targets, kind of like what we were talking about before with when they used to have, you know, very public stretch goal guidance, what always gave me confidence during those periods of time was that, okay, even if Tesla misses, like they're still going to be up, you know, 50%, 100%. So yeah, it's just, like you said, there's no other company that comes to mind that is like this, that you get such high confidence visibility into what the future is going to be with such an excellent track record of success.
Yeah, definitely. Rob, it's been fun chatting, catching up on this earnings call. Definitely, every quarter is different. Do you have any, I'm curious, is any 2022 plans for your channel or for you personally? I'm just curious what's going on here.
I do. Yeah. I'll defer people over to my channel for that, because hopefully some announcements coming soon.
Really? But nice. Yeah. Hopefully. Good. Awesome, man. Looking forward to it. I'll go ahead and link to your YouTube channel and Twitter account in the video description below. Definitely, if you don't follow Rob, go ahead, do it. He gives some of the best daily news on Tesla, helps you focus on the company and what's really going on, rather than, you know, the crazy kind of short-term madness of the markets. Yeah.
Things that sometimes get more attention, but most of the time shouldn't.
Yeah. All right, Rob. Have a great day, and thanks for chatting.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Okay.